Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can find this podcast by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere podcasts are found. Theme music for the show brought to you by Renaissance Records. This is Seti P's Soul Kick. Check them out on itsTheRenaissance.com. Thanks to all those who are tuning in today. We've got a special show for you today because the Steelers on this Thursday, March 26th, have made some extra moves in the XFL. We won't talk about that too much today. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Today, we have a special guest, former Locked On Steelers podcast host, John Ledyard. He's a current beat writer on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and he's a longtime NFL draft expert. I'll get all the questions from him. We'll have some debate on who we think the Steelers could take and some really good conversation there. So sit back, relax, listen to some great draft talk from John Ledyard and myself, and welcome him to the show. Let's get into it. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It is Thursday, March 26th, here on Locked On Steelers. I'm your host, Chris Carter. Of course, we've got a special guest, a former host of the Locked On Steelers podcast, my man, John Ledyard, a guy I've been reading for a long time, learned a lot about the NFL draft through him. Right now, he's a beat writer for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at pewterreport.com. He has a ton of experience. He's been a beat writer on the Steelers beat. He's been an NFL draft expert, still is, really. And he has you can find him on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft. John Ledyard, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to have you, man. Now, for those who don't know, John is one of the guys that, like, when I started just blogging when I was, like, in law school way back in the day and just kind of just doing it for fun and writing about the Steelers for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. And one of the first guys that I, like, peered into and, like, got some NFL draft, like, understanding how to cover it and how to, like, space things out and just organize my thoughts was John, and for years he's been that guy. He's worked for the Draft Network, and he recently did a 3-round mock, so we're going to get into that a little bit in the show. And in fact, that's kind of where we're going to lead into in this segment. But John, let's do it. I want to do a quick take now. Of course, you're from the Pittsburgh area. You've tied to, you covered the Steelers, so you of course keep tabs on them. I would like your take on what the Steelers' top needs are right now. Because I saw you on Twitter, you were kind of like, there's no specific place that's glaring to you because they've kind of like tried to address all these different positions. But in the Locked On Steelers group, we've had some polls done. According to our listeners in the group, the top votes done for the biggest need on offense was on the offensive line. And then the top vote for defense was a tie between defensive tackle, specifically nose tackle, and safety. What's your assessment of what the Steelers need the most, especially in those early picks?
Yeah, I think you're definitely right to say that there isn't any obvious hole. Like last year, I mean, it would have been hard to envision them not taking a linebacker at some point just because Mark Barron had such a bad track record in the NFL before coming to Pittsburgh, and Vince Williams was a guy that you could, as much as I love Vince, couldn't rely on him in coverage a whole lot. So right. It would have been surprising. I mean, I think you and I both kind of talking before the show even was like, we expected them to make a move up for, which is out of character for them, but that was how obvious the need was, I think. We're not really in that situation this year, I think, with this roster. It doesn't mean that there aren't needs. There just isn't a screaming hole in the lineup, like who's even going to play here, you know, type of situation. I think they have options everywhere, you know, but depth is an issue. Age is an issue. Probably why you're getting so many offensive line votes is because Wisniewski, Villanueva, Pouncey, DeCastro, all 30 or older now at this point. I think understandably people start getting a little bit worried about the group when they get a little bit long in the tooth like that. But I mean, guys like Villanueva doesn't have quite as much wear and tear on the body because he hasn't been, you know, playing at this level for that long. And then a guy like DeCastro is still absolutely at the peak of his game. So you're not super worried about him just yet. But I agree with people that I think it needs to be a consideration. Part of the problem is, offensive line is a valuable position, especially offensive tackle. And the likelihood that a run occurs on the position in the first round is pretty high. I mean, I had 7 offensive tackles going in my last mock, and I don't know many guys who fall in the league that would say, oh, that's crazy. Like, I think most people expect at least 6 in the first round, and then by the time 49 rolls around, you could easily have 7 or 8 offensive tackles off the board. So, right. You know, people are kind of hoping that it's a day one contributor. usually at 49, you're not getting that at offensive tackle. You might get it at receiver. You might get it at tight end, even in a different class, not this one, maybe defensive tackle, defensive. I mean, you could get it at a bunch of different positions. Offensive tackle, you're typically talking about guys that need some more development. So that may be okay, but that's where I'd say, like, I'm a little bit wary of what's going to be on the board at offensive tackle. I'd love to give him a great tackle, but at 49, you have to be realistic about who's going to be there. And I don't want to reach to fill a position that isn't truly in need right now. So that's why I say, I don't know if they have a true crying need, but almost every position on the team, really, to me, except quarterback and probably honestly tight end, is an option at 49. I know we may get into this a little bit, but I would say running back shouldn't be a desire of theirs at 49, mm-hmm. but it probably will be on their agenda to a degree. But other than those positions, I would really think everything's on the table, and it might be kind of best player available at every other spot on the team.
Yeah, that's the thing. One of my takes lately has been, and I mean, I think it's not like a hard take. It's just the obvious kind of reading the field. I think Kevin Colbert's moves have made it so best player available is completely on the table right now. There's no gaping need at tight end now that they signed Ebron and still have McDonald. There's no gaping need at interior offensive line because Wisniewski's going to be able to come in and at least address the loss of both Foster and Finney with expecting Matt Filer to bump over. There's definitely that sense, but there's still like you said, there's still that problem that with offensive line, like coming into this draft, like during the season, I was kind of just keeping an eye on where certain people ranked certain players, and I was like, well, maybe they can sneak an offensive lineman in the draft. And we finally saw where they got 49 and everything worked out, and you just saw how things were stacking up and how many other teams desperately needed to address their offensive lines. It just became clear and clear to me that's just not a realistic place to get a player. So to go over in your 3-round mock, before the Steelers pick at 49, like you said, you had 7 offensive tackles taken. You had 1 interior offensive lineman and Cesar Ruiz taken. You had 8 receivers, 3 running backs, 4 quarterbacks, 3 interior defensive linemen, 7 edge players, which is another point that I'm going to bring up later, 3 linebackers, 10 cornerbacks, and 2 safeties. When you looked at that, you picked for the first pick was Antoine Winfield, safety of Minnesota. And that's a good pick, in my opinion, because I do think that they would behoove themselves as an organization to get a third safety option that they can rely upon. I mean, we saw how Cam Kelly was going, before Minkah Fitzpatrick got there and really even after when they needed a third safety option. I do think that that's an important spot. The reason that I have made a point on this show about running back is that, and I get your point about the value of running backs in the NFL in today's game. I just think that with the way that they've invested in this offseason and the way that they're outlooking, I just think running back is really going to be their decision. If I had my choice, I'd still be looking best player available. If a guy falls down, I'll take those guys. But at running back, I just – if for some reason, like J.K. Dobbins or someone like that falls to them, I find that hard to pass up considering I do think that they're going to try and – scale back how much Ben Roethlisberger threw in 2018 compared to this year, and they don't seem too sure about James Conner or Benny Snell at this point. And that's my position. But where do you see as like is safety probably the best position? Like you only have 2 being taken before them, that being McKinley and Delpit. Is that really the best opportunity for the Steelers to move up?
Yeah, it is interesting because you're right. I was really looking at best player available there for 49 when I did this mock, and the way that things kind of fell was that you mentioned the position groups kind of that had all these, tackle and wide receiver had runs, and there's still some good receivers they could consider there. And I looked at some of those options too, but all these positions that people like would kind of love to see in Pittsburgh, edge defender, or maybe to back up Dupree's only on the tag. So you need depth there. That could be an option, so all those positions kind of, a little bit depleted by that point. And so it was kind of this, what position group isn't depleted at that point? 2 safeties off the board. I like Winfield State better than Delpas. I don't think he'll go before him, but for me, it was like, okay, this might be the best player available. He doesn't really fit the Steelers type. I mean, he did test well, which they do care about athleticism. They really value size too for the safety position. I don't know that he really fits that prototype. But at some point, they're going to have to be willing to step away from, I mean, Sean Davis and Terrell Edmonds, big athletic freaks who don't get football at a high level. Right. Antoine Winfield is kind of like the opposite of those guys, where he is athletic, but he doesn't have the size on his side at all. I mean, he's a smaller player, but he's a better, more reliable tackler than those guys. He understands coverages way better than those guys. He's just a smarter, more instinctive football player, better ball skill. I mean, you talk about ball skills, 7 picks last year, I think he had.
Yeah.
I mean, guy was all over the field making plays. And that's the kind of player that he is. Now, the injuries in the past, he's missed 2 seasons before this, so he's older and there's some injuries. Those are concerns too. You know, I know the Steelers prototypes in round one, but this is round two. I don't know if they'll hold a lot of those tendencies that they have, picking an underclassman and going with the Power Five school and those kind of things are not. We'll kind of see how all that shakes out, but because this is, you know, 49 is a far cry from even picking in the 20s, which they do a lot of the time. And so this is a bit of a different situation for them. So we'll see how they evaluate all that. But to me, I just thought safety was the biggest need, because you're right. After Minka and Terrell Edmonds, Dangerfield's a good special teams player, but if they have to start a game with Dangerfield at safety, they're not in a good situation.
Yeah,
that's really it. I mean, Cam Sutton may be able to play some safety. We'll see as things develop this year, you know, how Justin Lane comes along with that fourth corner spot. But I mean, right now you have nothing there, and Terrell Edmonds, frankly, has not impressed. I'm not giving up on him yet, but I'm definitely saying that you got to get some other options in there to push him. And they want to play 3 safety packages. Winfield can play in the slot too. So you may lose Mike Hilton in the future. You can't keep everybody. You're going to lose Cam Sutton probably in the future. So it's kind of a future move, but he also can play now and help you now. And if an injury happens, he's a crucial part of what you're doing now. So I think the pick makes sense in a lot of levels, but you might be right that running back is what they see as a bigger need. And they may go there because it's a good chance most of the top backs are still on the board at 49.
That's been my biggest reasoning, because I was one of them. Like, when I was coming out of the season and I hadn't really got a chance to do a whole bunch of research, I was looking at the field and I was looking at how teams were producing in the NFL. I'm like, man, if the Steelers could just get a bulldozing offensive line in its prime again, like the way they were in 2014 and 2015, that would allow Ben Roethlisberger so much more space to work with things, not only just for protection, but for being able to trust, like, hey, you know what? So what if we just got James Conner, Benny Snell back there, and now that these guys have taken the next step, they're going to be good enough with our offensive line to make those plays. But the reality is, just at 49, it's going to be tough to get one of those guys that can be a road grader and help you even next year if you're thinking about outside of this upcoming season. So you're right there. Now, last thing before we get to the end of the break, or the first break here, wanted to talk about it's become a joke on my show, but I get fake triggered whenever a national guy mocks an edge rusher to the Steelers with their first pick, because I'm just like, why are you doing this? And then they're all saying, well, they're not going to sign Bud Dupree. I'm like, yes, they are. And then they did. and even just with the tag, but like, and further to the point where we're talking about with offensive tackle, you got 7 edge rushers getting picked before the Steelers go at 49. Even if it's like 6 or 5, I still think that that's just a push. I think it's pushing the envelope to have the Steelers pick an edge rusher at 49 when all these other options are on the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that you have to weigh who's there and how well they fit too, especially in this class. Like, I'm all for loading up on pass rushers, and I think one of the biggest areas of this roster that has to improve, and I know they're up against it with the cap and it's been hard for them to do it, but they just don't have a third edge rusher. And those guys, Watt and Dupree, they have to take breaks. You have to get them off the field. And when they came off the field, the whole unit was just neutered last year because Anthony Chiclow could not get after the quarterback. And Ola Adeniyi, as much as I like him, he's not a great pass rusher or a great athlete either. So I think it's a need. I mean, even if you lock Dupree up, I mean, it's obviously not going to be the pick at 49 if you lock Dupree up, I don't think. But, you know, later in the draft, this class is terrible for edge rushers. So I'm just saying it more like hypothetically. If there were a good one later in the draft, that's the range you'd want. But it's just not a very good class for him. So I'm not even sure that it'll be worth it. But I mean, they just don't have anybody. I mean, Ola's the third edge right now.
Tuzar Skipper behind him. And that's just, I mean, as excited as people are about Tuzar Skipper in Pittsburgh because of how he played in the preseason, it's still like a long ways before, everyone thinks he's the next James Harrison, which I'll hop on the hype train, but you know, if I'm actually the GM making decisions, I'm not betting on that.
Right. And Dupree's been banged up and Watt's been banged up a little bit in the past. You just can't go into a game with Skipper and Adeniyi is your top guy. So I do think it's a big name. I wanted them to sign Clay Matthews badly, you know, the last 2 off seasons. This year, I thought they might actually have enough space with all the restructures to do that. And I mean, I think Derek Watt's a great special teamer. You know, Eric Ebron, I would have prioritized other positions over those guys. I would have prioritized another pass rusher, but they have really not prioritized that at all. I mean, Anthony Chiklo has been on this roster inexplicably. Yeah, yeah. I know he's a special teams guy, but really inexplicably for years as the third edge, and it just doesn't make sense. There's no talent there. There's nothing to develop there. There's no potential. So to me, that's been an area of the roster that's been overlooked, and I do worry about it. But I'm kind of with you in that I don't think they'll pick it at 49, regardless of what I think, and I don't know that there will be great options there. I do like Josh Uche a lot, so mm-hmm. I'd be very interested in him if he is there at 49, but he may not be. It's a pretty decent chance, I think, that he won't be. And so, yeah, it is a little bit tough to find the right fit for Pittsburgh in this draft, because this isn't the class to find a great edge rusher.
All right, with that, we're going to go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about the Steelers' needs and the NFL draft and where John sees maybe some moves later in the draft that they could sneak in some guys. All right, we're back. I'm Chris Carter here with John Ledyard, Tampa Bay Bucks beat writer for PewterReport.com, also NFL draft expert. John, you know, we were talking about the last draft. The one thing I also wanted to get in before we get into the later picks is you had them picking Antoine Winfield. Could you explain to our listeners why you would take Winfield over the other safeties that are kind of around his class in Ashton Davis of California and Jeremy Chinn of Southern Illinois? I saw you talking a little bit about Kyle Duggar, but I think we all kind of agree that Duggar's a little bit later than where of the value than the Steelers would probably pick at 49.
Yeah, so part of the thing with safeties to me, and I'll eventually have an article about this at Pewter Report. I do it every year. I'm actually trying to finish the safety class this week. But part of my thing with the safety class is that we say safety, but they're all different types of safeties. And some of them do a lot of different things well, like a Minka, who could play in the box, in the slot, or deep and probably be an all-pro at every spot. Some of them, you know, there's a kind of like Terrell Edmonds he's not going to play free safety for you and be effective, not nowhere near where Minka was. So some guys are like trying to find their role. Where's the best spot for me? And that may be Edmonds, because man, coverage isn't working out either. But I do think that with Winfield, it was kind of like, okay, what's the right fit? Because to me, I want a guy who can almost is balanced. You know, I don't know that I would want a guy that just does one thing right now, because Minka is going to be the free safety, but also it would behoove the Steelers to be able to move him around some and get him closer to the line of scrimmage in situations and on occasion play that role. But they can't do that right now because they have no flexibility with their current. I mean, Edmonds isn't playing deep. Dangerfield isn't playing deep. Yeah. So they don't have any flexibility with their current lineup. And that's part of the problem with trying to get Minka more involved. Late in the year, Minka's talked about it after the season. He said, you know, I think I got two targets the last 7 weeks of the season or something. I mean, he's crazy. I mean, nobody threw at him at all. They just totally ignored the middle of the field. So he was shutting down everything, but, you know, teams were just going other places and he couldn't be as effective because he simply wasn't around the ball. And when you're a free safety, you can be the best free safety in the world, but that's just part of the problem. You're just too far away from the ball a lot of the time. So I think, having said that, that'll be one of the things that's interesting to see how they respond to that. If teams, again, just decide to totally avoid him, can they get him involved? Can they blitz him? Will he do some things around the line of scrimmage? You know, I'm personally fine with keeping him deep. I think it's a priority of theirs to kind of move things around. If they want to do that, they have to have somebody that can play free safety. So I love Winfield because of that. He plays a lot of free safety. But what I like about Winfield that might be a better fit for the Steelers is that he can also play around the box in the line of scrimmage, even though he's smaller. But he can also match up on the slot and man coverage. Now, I didn't pick Ashton Davis here because I think Ashton Davis didn't get the chance to test, and everybody knows he's a great athlete, but I think that teams not getting the chance to do testing with him, I don't know whether he'll need you know, all those kind of things with him. There's some question marks, but he's actually my favorite safety in the class. I just don't know where the NFL is going to see him right now. I haven't heard anything about him where I think Winfield's kind of climbing up boards. I haven't heard anything medically related that'll be concerning with him, even though I know he's had issues in the past. So I'm not sure what the NFL thinks of Davis, so I was trying to keep it a little bit realistic and predictive. I think he can do a lot of those things. He's not quite as developed as Winfield, hasn't been playing football at that level quite as long as Winfield, wasn't the son of an NFL star like Winfield. And so I think that's the reason kind of I chose Winfield. But if they chose Ashton Davis, I'd be ecstatic. I just happen to think Davis's best position in the football field is at free safety, single high, like Minka is used. And so I don't know if the two would complement each other quite as well as a Winfield would complement somebody like Minka.
No, I hear that. I do also see the value in that, because one thing I love in doing X's and O's is when you get that all 22, or like when NBC did their Madden cam, whatever you wanted to call it, but you could see that safety's moving. And there was a game against the Titans 2 years ago where you got that, and I was able to sort of show people live instead of waiting for the all 22 to come out. I'm like, look, this is where the safeties are moving. The Steelers are confident now with able to, you know, having guys that can communicate and disguise different coverages. That is something that is what having two or three safeties that you can rotate, and one guy can play deep and the other guy can play deep, and you can switch one dropping down, one going back, or both going back as a switch up, and how that can confuse even very good quarterbacks. So I do agree that that's a major need. And I've looked at Ashton Davis, and I think, like, man, he'd be interesting. You know, I'm just curious as to how the Steelers are planning with what they want, because I also got to feel like, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, as much as, you know, as the Steelers are close-lipped about how they do their draft process, you do got to think that he has a voice and on the opinions of what's going on and how things are looking. And you do think, I just think that they're going to try and address something on offense with that second round pick to give him another weapon on offense. Maybe a receiver, but again, you have 8 wide receivers going before the Steelers pick, and this is a great wide receiver class. Could you give us some diamonds in the rough, maybe not even with that second round pick, maybe with a third or one of their 2 fourth round picks, a receiver that could slip down and people are overlooking that would benefit the Steelers with what they have right now?
Yeah, if I'm Pittsburgh, I feel really good about Juju Smith-Schuster having a bounce back year to some degree. Mm-hmm. I feel great about Deontay Johnson. I think the guys could be a star. I don't push it at 49. I'm looking best player available. I don't push for a receiver at 49. I don't completely trust James. Well, I'd love to. I just don't trust James Washington quite yet. He has had some. He had some great games this season. There's no doubt, with bad quarterback play. I get that. I want to see him do it with Ben. I want to see him do it more consistently. You know, there's a couple good games, and then there's some rough games, and he drops the football, and he just doesn't look like a great athlete at any point out on the field, and that bothers me. And you know, so I think that there are still enough concerns with his game to think about adding to the receiver group. I don't think it's a pressing need of 49 or anything like that, but I do think it's something that they should eventually prioritize. I would like to see vertical threats in the offense. Right. You know, Washington was kind of brought in for that role, except he isn't that fast. And so I don't know how much he strains defenses. So it'll be interesting to see how they address it and who's on the board. Like I said, if we're talking about not at 49, so let's take it off the board for 49. And we're talking about best available guys around that, 102 range or something like that. I think a Chase Claypool from Notre Dame is somebody that Pittsburgh fits their type of receiver in terms of having the size and the speed. I think if you're looking for a type of guy that Kevin Colbert's like, this is the guy I would want to add to the group that I have right now, it's probably a big outside vertical threat to stretch the field. The problem is, if he trades back from 49, he may be in the sweet spot to land one of the top guys. But I don't know that at 102 you're going to get a guy that is totally polished and ready to be a top three receiver for you, you know, the next day or whatever. So I think Claypool's a guy that's an option that can stretch the field vertically. Did it at Notre Dame. Not super explosive, but the long strides eventually gets on top of corners. And he showed this year he could finish contested catch situations. He was in a lot of them. He competes. He blocks. He's tough as nails. He's a gunner on special teams right away. Mm-hmm. So he fills he checks a lot of boxes in that regard that the Steelers would be interested in. The other guy I'll throw out is Michael Pittman from USC. I don't think he always played as fast as he tested, but he gets behind. He knows how to stack corners physically. He's great contested catch receiver. I worry about the full route tree with him, but at 102, you're probably going to have concerns about kind of who's ever available at that point in time. So I would say those two guys, I don't know if you wouldn't call them sleepers for sure, but guys that I think are probably in the 80 to 120 range, maybe for team. Now Pittman tested great, but I think there's concerns with his tape that might push him down the board. I'm not really sure what teams are going to think of him yet. You know, he could surprise people. I heard people saying he could go in the 40s. The other day, I was like, man, that just seems really high to me for him.
Yeah.
So those are the names I would throw out there as guys that are consideration. And the other guy later in the draft is Bryan Edwards from South Carolina. He didn't get the chance to do the Senior Bowl, and he didn't get a chance to do the Combine because he's still nursing an injury. And now he's not going to get a chance to do his pro day. So there's medicals that are up in the air with him, and there's testing that is up in the air with him. his tape, like the entire South Carolina offense, it was pretty inconsistent, but the high points over the last couple of years are crazy good. I mean, crazy good. And the Steelers have tended to gravitate toward those players that there's up and down and some frustrations on tape. I mean, almost every receiver they've taken fits that bill to a degree. But there's high end upside if they can tap into it. And most of the time they do tap into it at wide receiver. So I think he could be a guy that if teams are just like, there's too many questions, we're going to pass. And that keeps happening into the fourth round. We could see the Steelers, you know, maybe take a shot at somebody like Edwards.
I think that's a very good point there. Chase Claypool is a very popular pick. So every Monday, because we have a mock draft Monday thing we do now with Locked On, we're partnering with the Draft Network. And every Monday I do a contest where fans can post their own mock drafts, and then I just pick one that I really like, and then I go through pick by pick. And I got to tell you, almost all of them, like Chase Claypool is a very popular option. People see that height, people see that speed, people see that playmaker, and they're thinking like, man, like if we just had a burner like Martavis Bryant. And that's one of the comments that I get the most is I miss having that deep threat guy. So I'm right on with you. I think that is something that they're missing with this group, because Deontay Johnson, you know, everyone initially wanted to compare him to Antonio Brown. I was like, you know, it's funny. I want to say closer to San Antonio Holmes, even though they're very similar in a lot of ways. But just the way that he runs his routes, the way how quick he is off the ball, and the way how he's able to deceive the defensive backs and lose them in coverage, yeah, that's definitely a specialty to have. You got Juju Smith-Schuster as a bigger bodied guy, but still no burner. And I think that's a very interesting one. I also look at the rest of the receiver class, and I'm thinking like you could also, even if you say those guys are off the board at fourth, and you use them with you had the Steelers at 102 picking Logan Sternberg, guard out of Kentucky, a teammate of Benny Snell, and that made a lot of sense, because I still think that even with Wisniewski, they want to get another interior offensive lineman that they can at least train up in the coming years to get ready for that spot.
Right. I am still not sure how to weigh the Wisniewski signing, because to me, if you have a guy who played right tackle at a high level or offensive tackle at a high level for an entire season, you keep him at offensive tackle. It just seems straightforward to me. Now, that doesn't mean that Matt Filer's best position isn't left guard. It very well may, and probably is long-term his best position. But the problem is, if you move Matt Filer to left guard, who is going to play right tackle? Mm-hmm. I would love to say Chukwuma Okorafor is ready to step into that role. That would be awesome. We haven't really seen that happen yet. Yeah. He hasn't gotten a huge chance to play either. So, I mean, that's the situation to me that everybody should want to know about in Pittsburgh. You know, what is Chukwuma? I think he's a huge X factor right now. If he's ready to step in a right tackle and even play like Matt Filer, an undrafted free agent, you know, played last season, I mean, this offensive line can be definitely better than it was last year, because to me, Filer is definitely an upgrade at left guard over Ramon Foster. And if Okorafor can equal Filer, I think Pouncey will have a bounce back year. DeCastro is still playing at a high level. I just think this unit can be better than they were a year ago. So I say that to say, I mean, Filer, you know, his game against Aaron Donald was one of the underrated performances of the season last year.
It was
a great performance. And so I just think that right tackle spot is open. So in other words, I feel like they have more options at right tackle than they have at left guard right now, because if things go bad and Okorafor and Banner struggle, you move Filer back over there, you play Wisniewski at left guard, but then what are your depth options? So far, we haven't really seen Okorafor play at guard, I don't think at all. Maybe I'm forgetting, maybe in preseason. Banner isn't a guard. And so at that point, it becomes, okay, what are your options at guard behind Wisniewski? If Filer has to play right tackle, you don't have a lot. So to me, I'd want to fortify the guard position. And I think you'd want to figure out who's your best option to tackle from Filer, Okorafor, and Banner. And then once you've solidified that, you make your checklist at left guard kind of as the second priority. So that's why I chose a guard there, and I'm kind of okay with ignoring tackle at those first two picks.
I'm glad you brought up Zach Banner, because if we didn't, I feel like someone was going to tweet at me and then Zach Banner was going to come for me, and that would have been a whole problem. Anyways, thanks for that talk. We're going to do one more break, and we're going to come back. And while we have a Tampa Bay guy here, let's talk about Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, because everyone in Pittsburgh is yapping about it. All that and more right after this. All right, we're back. Chris Carter here with John Ledyard. John, off the air, we were talking. You said you have a cool Zach Banner story. It seems like everyone should have a cool Zach Banner story.
Yeah, just because you mentioned him in the last segment, it got me thinking. And then during the break, I remembered. So Banner, you know, he kind of has his brand on Twitter, and You know, people kind of, you know, people who don't follow the Steelers have no idea Zach Banner's kind of, I mean, in quotes, revitalized his career, you know, because he's back in the league at least. And so, you know, Steelers fans love him. And so somebody, a prominent draft guy mentioned Zach Banner or mentioned, you know, I think it was the Steelers not having options to tackle or something like that. And, you know, everybody just, you know, Steelers fans just pouring into his mentions about Zach Banner. And he DMs me and he's like, is Zach Banner like awesome now? Like, what is going on? I didn't even know he was in the league. Like, he was like so confused and he was worried that he'd like dropped the ball and made this huge mistake. And I was just like, no, dude, you don't understand. Like, Zach Banner came in for like extra tight, third tight end, and he's eligible. And he was like, I don't get it. I was like, you have to be from Pittsburgh, man. You're not going to understand like how the fans go crazy for. He was just like, so they're getting mad about like a fourth tackle. And I was like, yeah, dude, don't worry about it. It's just, it's a Zach Banner thing, man. You have to know his brand to get it, you know? So it was funny to me because it's funny that such an obscure player has become kind of one of the most popular players in Pittsburgh, you know, a guy that is making probably as little as anybody in the team almost this upcoming season and last season is one of the fan favorites. So it'll be fun to see
it play out. And John, I got to tell you, man, like sitting in the press box, hearing people lose their mind every time he was announced to come in. I mean, all the writers looking around like, we've never seen something like this. Like, what is going on? Who is this guy?
And it's great for morale, but it's, well, I don't want to offend any Zach Banner truthers out there, but there's just, when he was in the game, they didn't run the football very well. It wasn't his fault. It's just the fact that when you bring an offensive lineman into the game at tight end, you're kind of telling everybody you're probably going to run the football. And if you pass it, it's probably not going to be effective. And so you're bringing everybody into the box and making running 100 times harder. But I like Banner thing too, as a fan, just because he's a fun guy, but as a strategy, it's not really working out.
Well, hopefully Zach Banner will not and his people will not come for you for saying it on the show. But hey, let's get listen, I made the mistake once of like not bringing him up and someone chewed me out. I was like, okay, don't kill me. And it was funny because Zach didn't like all during training camp, people wanted to talk to him and he was like, I'm not talking, talk to the starters. And like he made it a point that he wouldn't talk during training camp. And then when the success came this year, at least the hype came this year, he opened up a little bit more. It's been really cool to see his rise and to see how Pittsburgh has taken him as a community. And that is pretty cool. But let's get into some Tampa Bay talk. Now, Steelers fans are, I'm not sure if scared is the word, but they are on alert that Tom Brady is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer now. He's working with Bruce Arians. He's got Mike Evans. He's got Chris Godwin. He's got Kim Brady. He's got O.J. Howard. So everyone's concerned about how much damage this guy's going to do. They don't have to even play Tampa Bay. They played them, 2 years ago, so they're good. But they're worried that he's going to win another Super Bowl with them and how annoying that can be. I propose on the show a nightmare that I was chastised for even bringing up, the nightmare that if New England found a way to make the Super Bowl and Tampa Bay found a way to make the Super Bowl, who would Pittsburgh root for? And people, like, threw Rotten Tomatoes at me. So, but what's been the feel? You're a beat writer. What's been the feel so far of how the organization is handling Tom Brady and the direction they're going with him? Because they also just signed Ndamukong Suh today. And, you know, there's talk about how many athletes are want to come to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, the Bucs don't have, you know, Bruce Arians. We were on a conference call with him today, and he was like, yeah, we've had lots of calls from people, but we don't have money to say, you know, we don't have that much money to sign that many more people, you know, after tagging Barrett and bringing Pierre-Paul back and, you know, Brad and Brady to the fold. And so, I mean, yeah, financially, they're, you know, they're not in a bad spot. They're just, don't have a ton of space to make any big splashes per se right now. But I think that the Brady thing is so exciting for Tampa Bay. I mean, you're talking about a small market that hasn't had the NFL lens on them since, you know, they won the Super Bowl in the early 2000s. And even that, most people don't even remember that the Bucs won the Super Bowl in the early 2000s with that great defense. Yep. And so they have just kind of been a forgotten franchise for a long time. And now that is anything but the case. And they'll probably have some primetime games. And so for the loyal fan base that exists in Tampa Bay, man, I mean, it's just exciting and fun for them. The Bucs have never, Chris, signed a quarterback that they drafted to a second contract. So there is years of futility at this position. That includes guys like Doug Williams. That includes Steve Young. That includes Trent Dilfer. So there have been three guys that went on to win Super Bowls that the Bucs drafted, didn't sign to a second contract, and went on to have success. You know, for Dilfer, it was relative, but success elsewhere with other teams. And so that has been tough for Bucs fans to stomach over the years. There's a contingency that's fearful Winston will be the next in that line. I don't think that they have anything to worry about, but we'll see how that situation plays itself out. But I mean, I don't know how anyone can criticize the move. I mean, the Bucs may not win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady here, but clearly he was the best available option in free agency and better option than Winston, and they got him. And so, I mean, that's a win, you know, period. It's a win. Quarterback position, not everybody has Patrick Mahomes, and you have to make the most out of what you have and build other spots on your team up. And so, you know, Brady to me still has plenty left in the tank. You know, I went back and reviewed a lot of his season this past year, and I saw an offense that was a total train wreck. I think he was frustrated at times, and his play showed that. But in terms of skill set, I don't think anything's gone. I mean, I don't think much of anything's gone there. You know, he needs the clean platforms to throw. And so I think how the offense works out in terms of chemistry and things like that will be important. But yeah, it's super exciting for Tampa Bay and for Steelers fans. Man, I don't know what they're worried about. Like, you definitely won't have to see him unless you're in the Super Bowl unless he plays three more years. Like, they won't have to see him. So, I mean, they should be celebrating in the streets. No more Brady in the AFC. You know, the path just definitely got easier. The whole AFC East, you know, I mean, I think the Bills will be tough, but not, you know, a team that is tough to overcome like New England when they had Brady and that offense clicking along with the defense and Belichick. So to me, I think the AFC just got weaker by that move. And although there's still obvious dominant teams in the AFC in Baltimore and Kansas City right now, I don't think there's a clear number three team, and Pittsburgh has every opportunity to be that team right now. And if you're in those top three, I mean, you only have to be one of the top two probably. And, you know, you could definitely see a path where you're getting to the Super Bowl. And so I think it should be a time of celebration for Steelers fans.
Yeah, it's been an interesting split, because there's been some that are kind of like, man, we wanted to be the ones, like, we wanted him to come back so we had the chance to knock him off. But there's also been the contingency, like, just good, get him the hell out of here. We don't want to see him anymore. so it's been interesting logging responses to the Brady saga, and it's going to be interesting to see how it develops there, because there's the small contingency. Oh, I wouldn't even say small. There's a lot of people on social media that say this, but you know that Brady is a system quarterback. I've always said that Brady is the best processor of defenses that I've ever seen. Just the way that he knows where everyone's at and where his guys are going to be, and being able to pick you apart, that's always impressed me the most. So I think that will immediately translate for the Buccaneers. I saw you were talking, because you were tweeting about some of the things that Bruce Arians was saying. One of the main things that people are saying right now about Tom Brady and him going to the Buccaneers is that he doesn't have the cannon arm anymore to throw the deep ball. And Bruce Arians disagreed with that take. Where do you stand on the, because you know, you got two big play receivers in Godwin and Evans. Do you think that the zip on the ball to get those big passes way down the field, is, do you think that will become an issue at any point for Brady, or is that just really overstated and he's about to just be able to sling that thing?
Ted Wynn of The Athletic wrote in a piece this past week how most quarterback experts he's talked to don't really believe that arm strength depreciates over time for most quarterback prospects. And I have absolutely found that to be true, both in watching players and in talking to quarterback experts in football. You know, it just, that's not really usually a concern. They're not whipping this thing, you know, like a baseball pitcher may. And so there isn't that type of strain. You know, some people look at Peyton Manning's situation, but you know, that was the neck injury. Remember, I mean, that he had to change the whole way he played after the neck injury. Yeah. And the fact that he was still as effective as he was crazy. But that shortened his career. You know, I think he could have been fine moving forward if it hadn't been for that type of injury. And Brady's not had anything like that. So, yeah, there is no concern for me with Brady's arm strength. You know, anybody saying noodle arm for Brady this past season is just, you know, an AFC East, a fan of another AFC East team, or, you know, just a hater, because there's just no, I mean, it just doesn't happen. And you could look at his tape. Those plays aren't there. You know, he missed some throws. He threw some balls into coverage this year that he normally doesn't. You know, I think he was frustrated. And so there were more decision-making errors, I think, than Brady that this past year, and still really low interception numbers, but just from him, you know, he's maybe the best decision maker of all time at quarterback. Yeah. So I think that part of his game, you know, I'll have a watchful eye on that. Although I think with a different offense, you're not going to see the same level. I think he just forced the ball downfield at times because they needed big plays. They just didn't have anybody to create big plays. So he was open for, you know, PIs, and at times he was willing to risk the interception for a contested catch. And that just isn't going to be the case in Tampa Bay. You got two of the best downfield receivers in the league, and Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. And so I think that part of his game, maybe, you know, you could have some concerns about. The mobility is going to be, you know, behind an offensive line that is good but not great. That's a fair question mark. Arm strength, I mean, watch the game against the Titans in the playoffs. Brady didn't even play great in that game. Nobody for New England's offense did. But he threw two throws in that game, a deep crossing route to Ben Watson and a corner route to Julian Edelman right as he's coming out of his – I mean, hits him in the money between three defenders, zipping the ball. I mean, the thing is sizzling out of his hand. So, yeah, the release speed, the arm strength, I mean, that's not – the velocity, it's not an issue. You know, and if he comes out and he throws it well a couple times with Tampa Bay, everybody would be like, what did Brady do this offseason to get his arm strength back? But it was just a lazy narrative. So, you know, I think – Arians is right about that part of it, but there are, you know, as he gets older, there's question marks I think that are worth considering with Brady. I don't think he's as effective and accurate all the time as he was before. I mean, he really needs the clean base to be able to be that accurate. But we're, you know, like I said, we're still talking about a guy who's clearly one of the top 12 quarterbacks in the league. To me, there's no question about that. So, you know, the Bucs get that and add that and subtract a lot of the mistakes they made last season, I think they're feeling pretty good about the direction of the offense.
Dude, you just brought up Ben Watson. The fact that he had to play tight end for them is ridiculous. I still remember Ben Watson as a young player chasing down Champ Bailey in an AFC divisional playoff game. Champ Bailey had like a pick six in the bag, and he slowed up at the end, and Ben Watson chased him down and knocked the football out and got a touchback out of it. The fact that he's still playing, he was drafted in like 2004, and –
he just retired again, and man, okay, I mean, one of my,
we'll see how long that lasts.
Right, yeah, we'll see. He's still in amazing shape, but not only one of my favorite players of all time, but one of my favorite people of all time. You know, everything he's written and just has made a big impact on my life, and so I really appreciate everything he is as a person too. So it's definitely somebody that the game will miss for sure.
All right, last thing real quick. There's been a lot of hype in Pittsburgh about the Steelers. Should they sign Jameis Winston? It started with Peter King and now Andrew Filippone here on the 93.7 The Fan. Everyone's hyping it up. I keep trying to tell people, stop it. It's not happening. What's your take on Jameis Winston and why the Steelers should or shouldn't take this guy?
I'm trying not to like ruffle feathers or get you in any trouble with anything I say on this pod. So I'll keep my comments a little bit neutered. But I mean, the Steelers have $10 million in cap space. You need probably
about
$6 to $7 million to sign your draft class. And so if Jameis is going to play for $4 million or $3 million or probably more like $2.5 million at this point, is what they're willing to give out and give themselves some flexibility. I mean, sure, like whatever, you know, if you want to restructure five guys' contracts for your backup quarterback that, you know, even though you've already said repeatedly, you're going to go with Mason Rudolph, you know, maybe somebody can believe that that's worth discussing. I happen to think that the draft is a month away and there's a lot of interesting things to discuss there. And, you know, this team has made some offseason moves and Ben Roethlisberger's coming back. And so to me, there's a lot of discussion topics, but some people have a hard time getting into all of those. And so they go for the low hanging fruit. But yeah, Jameis Winston's not coming to Pittsburgh unless he's willing to play for dirt cheap. And I don't think they're even interested, even if he was willing to play for dirt cheap. And so I think you'll see him eventually land somewhere else. I would guess there's not a big rush on his part to find that fit once it became clear that nobody really viewed him as a starter. You know, now it's kind of about waiting it's almost behooves him to wait for like an opportune moment where a situation with somebody, you know, I don't know what it could be at this point, because we're not going to have off-season programs. So he may be in a tough spot because of that. But yeah, ordinarily I'd say if somebody gets injured, but I don't think we're talking about waiting until, you know, that point in the year. So he's got to look at his options and find a place where he might be able to get on the field. Because if he can't get on the field, I mean, 2 years from now, is that the next time he gets, you know, he's got to look at it. He's got to make his choice carefully. And I don't think money can be his guide, because this next contract doesn't matter at this point. It's about the one after that, if he can get on the field. So a lot up in the air for Jameis, big decisions for him to make.
Awesome. John, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been great. We have you back sometime, maybe closer to the draft.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I really appreciate you having me on. This is a ton of fun, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again before the draft.
And John, give us the plugs, anything that you got that you want people to check out.
Yeah, I mean, over at pewterreport.com, I'm doing plenty of draft stuff. So lots of fan bases come and check out our stuff, even though, you know, we're technically a Bucs site. Like, there's a lot of draft stuff going on that people love. to check out. And most people know that is my background anyway. So, you know, people come over and check out that stuff just because of that. But we're having lots of fun draft discussions over there. And yeah, I think that'll be probably the place. And then obviously on Twitter at Ledyard, L-E-D-Y-A-R-D, NFL Draft. You can follow me. And I'm, even though I'm a Bucks guy, I'm talking about all 32 teams because I just love the game. And I followed all 32 for a while. And the draft kind of relates to all 32. So you better know all 32. And so we have lots of fun discussions on there as well.
Awesome. John, thanks again. Thanks to all those who are listening. If you love the show, please hit the subscribe button, leave a 5-star review, as well as a positive comment for the show. We got a recent one. We got Iron Lung 666. Well, dangerous name, my man. But yeah, 5 stars. Thanks for the review. He says, love the quid pro quo. Josh Taylor's really good. I discovered this podcast thanks to one of your appearances on his show late last season. Nice to hear him on here too. Also, John, Josh was shouting you out too. So
that's my guy.
Yeah, he's everybody's guy. Josh Taylor's the man. But all right, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow with more talk on the Steelers.